Now, he's beginning to argue with the marine guards at each checkpoint, saying whatever he's supposed to from his clipboard. He's getting pissed off, and he's getting mad. We're going on for about 3 hours, almost like an open desert. This is going on forever and ever. Instead of letting him go right through, they're making him go from checkpoint to checkpoint. They're making him jump through all these little hoops. Things were about to get much stranger. Remember, Ramon says, everyone's wearing green fatigues. The next time I turn around, everyone inside the bus has got a yellow jumpsuit on. Everyone's wearing yellow jumpsuits, including myself. Ramon found himself slipping back into a trance-like state and then woke up and began to gather myself again. He looked at the other officers and saw that they were back in their green fatigues. So was he. At some point, he fell back asleep again, woke up, and once again, everyone wore yellow jumpsuits. This happened 3 or 4 times, Ramon says, green fatigues and yellow jumpsuits. He later learned that yellow jumpsuits are used when entering a radiation area. At the time, he was more concerned about how his uniform was changing without his knowledge. After many hours of driving and checkpoints, they finally arrived at their destination. It was an isolated hangar in a desert location, presumably within driving distance of Camp Pendleton. It was now evening, and it was raining. The bus pulled right up to the hangar. As he exited, Ramon noticed a bright blue light coming from the hangar. So, they march us over to this hangar, and they bring us to an open room inside this hangar. Along one wall was a row of 6 or 7 condensing units, each about the size of a refrigerator and fully active, making a high-pitched humming noise. Ramon and the other young privates all stood at attention when in walked the sergeant who had originally given them the spiel. Two doctors in white coats accompanied the sergeant, who again began to reiterate the same spiel, about how their mission was for the betterment of their country. One by one, the privates were brought to a chair where their blood was drawn and they were apparently hypnotized. When it was Ramon's turn, he sat down. In front of him was a small, spinning wheel with black and white stripes. Ramon was instructed to look at the wheel while the doctors spoke. Then they injected us with something to sedate us, Ramon says. Hi, Ramon, one of the doctors said. Ramon, we want you to know that we are going to be with you. What we're going to do, we want you to know that we're going to be with you. I want you to remember this. We are going to be with you in the room at all times. There was more that he doesn't remember. Ramon was then returned to the group of privates. After each man had his turn, they pulled a pair of large hangar doors open, revealing the contents of the hangar itself. Ramon's first thought was, oh, my God in heaven. In front of him, sitting on the floor of the hangar, was a UFO. I see this craft inside the damn hangar, Ramon says. It was similar to the one I saw as a child, but instead of high gloss, it's like a dull gray. A mobile staircase sat next to it, leading up to an opening in the craft. The sergeant continued talking to the men about the importance of their mission and that it was for the betterment of the country. At this point, they marched out several reptilian-looking humanoids. They brought these beings up to us, Ramon explains. They walked right alongside the sergeant. They weren't being held, they were coexisting, shoulder to shoulder. One of the reptilian-looking figures approached Ramon and the other men. He walks up to us, and I just look at him. This being was 7 feet tall, muscular, not skinny, wearing a blackish-green uniform. I remember the face looking almost scaly, like a reptile, like a snake has scales. It was frightening. The reptilian's uniform was featureless except for a large badge depicting a dragon-like creature. The group of marines became very upset by the appearance of the reptilian and broke rank. The next thing I remember, Ramon says, I'm standing in front of my barracks around 3 o'clock in the morning. Ramon was stunned and disoriented. He had the sense that at least one day had passed, maybe two. He was back at Pendleton, hundreds of miles from where he was moments ago, or what seemed to be moments. Ramon was so traumatized that he was unable to move. He could only stand there. He couldn't even lift his feet to walk up the steps and get inside. Another marine approached him. Can I help you up to the barracks? He said. Yes, can you help me? Ramon said. I can't move. Here, he said. I'll help you. The man guided Ramon back to his bunk. Ramon immediately fell into a deep sleep. When he woke up, he reflected back on the entire ordeal. He remembered how it all began with him overhearing the Marines talking outside his office. At the time, he was worried that he was hearing something he wasn't supposed to know about. Now he realized, it had all been intentional. They had tricked him. I think it was more of a setup, he says. I feel like they let me hear this. The question was, why? What did the whole experience mean? Why couldn't he remember most of it? Why did they show him the UFO? Even more importantly, why was he taken to meet a reptilian being? He was just a kid, 17 years old, and now he already had a high-level security clearance and knew things about the military that most people would consider mind-blowing. What was going on? Ramon couldn't help but connect his own encounters at age 6 at the Barcelona Homes government housing project to what had just happened. He felt like a pawn in some weird experiment involving the UFOs, extraterrestrials, military and mind control. He soon discovered how right he might have been. 3 days later, Ramon says, I was transferred from headquarters and service into a grunt unit. It's a combat unit. I was assigned to a combat unit. Then, I found myself in Vietnam. Ramon was assigned to 4 officers. 4 other privates were also assigned to the group, and off they went into the Vietnam wilderness on some unknown mission. The 9 men tromped through the thick jungle. The only thing I'm thinking, says Ramon, is why in the heck am I assigned to these officers? They kept hiking until they came to an area with a huge cave with a carved out, round, circular opening right in the middle of the jungle. Ramon's first thought was, this is something big enough for a UFO to get into. Of course. He said nothing. He obeyed his orders and asked no questions. The next day, they were in the area of the cave when something happened which Ramon still is unable to explain. They heard a loud sound of an electrical discharge above them. Suddenly, coming down out of the sky around the group of men was a series of energy bolts completely encircling them in a large perimeter. There was a big, giant, round circle around us, Ramon explains. These beams, electrical bolts came straight down from the sky. Cobalt blue, all around us. And the officers were just looking at it saying, oh, okay, okay. Ramon had no idea if the officers were expecting it or not. If they had any information, they didn't divulge it. After a few moments, the beams of light stopped and were gone. We just looked at each other in amazement, Ramon says, because these things were as high as a 3-story building. They made a circle around us. Shortly following the incident, Ramon was assigned to another unit. Every man had an assignment, he says. My job at that time was to document anything that was in the air. Whenever we were out on patrol, that was my job. It was a curious assignment, he thought, considering his experiences. And he wasn't shocked when he began seeing more UFOs. The jungle was a sea of inky blackness at night. The only light came from the stars and the moon. Any lighted objects in the sky were highly visible. One evening while out on a patrol, Ramon noticed a glowing object, brighter than a star, darting around at sharp angles. He walked up to the corporal of his unit and said, look at this damn thing. It's zigzagging and flying around. The corporal looked at the light. It's probably a satellite, he said. Ramon knew better than to argue with the officer, but he couldn't help it. A satellite goes around, but it doesn't zigzag like this and stay in one spot. The corporal had no answer. I knew in my heart of hearts, it was a UFO, Ramon says. I have always had a funny feeling that I was programmed, or followed, or something like that. I had that same feeling when I was seeing that. It was to be the first of many such sightings. I saw this over and over, Ramon says. I knew what it was. Wherever we were assigned, from mountain range to mountain range, it always seemed to follow my location. Ramon remembered how 12 years earlier, at age 6, he had been inside the UFO and had seen from the inside how the craft had darted round. Now, seeing the darting motion, he recognized it. Ramon remained in Vietnam until 1965 when he was badly injured and was sent to the Yokosuka Naval Hospital in Japan. He remained there for the next 3 months. It was during this time that something very strange happened. Ramon had been raised under the Catholic faith. The hospital had a chapel section on the fourth floor that people of different faiths could visit to pray. One day, while Ramon convalesced in his hospital bed, a black man, a Marine officer, approached his bedside and introduced himself, saying he was a chaplain's assistant. "I need to talk to you," the man said. "About what?" "I need to talk to you," he repeated. "I don't know you," Ramon said, and turned the man away. A few days later, the man appeared again. "I need to talk to you." "Okay, fine," Ramon said, but again, he rebuffed the man. The next day, the man showed up again, crying, with tears flowing freely down his face. "What's wrong, man?" Ramon asked. "I came here," the man said. "I need to talk to you, okay?" "Okay," said Ramon. "God knows what happened to you," the man said. "What do you mean?" "He knows what happened to you as a child." "Well, what do you mean?" Ramon repeated. The man opened a Bible to the back section where there was a map of the Middle East, Jerusalem, Iraq, Iran, Lebanon. "When you see fighting there, you're going to be approached again by a UFO." Ramon shook his head. "What do you mean?" "You were approached as a child," the man said. "God knows what happened to you with this UFO." "What?" said Ramon. He was taken aback. How could this man know about the UFO? He told almost nobody. "God knows what happened to you. When you see fighting there, there's been fighting there for thousands of years," Ramon said, interrupting. The man began crying again. "No, in your lifetime. Never forget what you are going to see. Remember what you are going to see, so you won't faint when you go inside it. You're going to touch these aliens on the forehead in Jesus' name. This is what God wants you to do. Draw strength and never forget this." "Fine," Ramon said. "Okay," and he quickly left the chaplain's assistant and went back to his bed and eventually to sleep. Although he was a Marine, and had done some courageous things, there was no way he was going to approach an alien and touch its forehead. That night, in the middle of the night, he woke to the sound of music. Thinking the nurse must have left her radio on, he went to the nurse's station and saw that the radio was off. He could still hear the music, so he followed it down the hallway to the stairwell. He was on the seventh floor, and the music was coming from below. He followed the music down to the fourth floor. It was coming from the chapel area, he realized. It sounded like angels. They were singing, "Praise God and His mighty works. Praise God and His mighty name." Suddenly, for some unknown reason, he found himself drawn to the non-denominational chapel. He saw a strange golden light, and felt as though a force pulled him there. It was empty, except for he heard a faint mumbling coming from one of the closets. "I walk up to this little closet," Ramon says, "and I pull this door open. The Marine who approached me, he is in this closet." His arms were folded over his chest in an X, he's rocking back and forth. His feet aren't touching the ground, and he's speaking in tongues. Ramon jumped back in shock. The man was levitating and speaking in a weird language. It was incredible. Ramon had never heard of such a thing. He quickly fled back upstairs and went to bed. The next day, he went to the Catholic priest and told him what happened. "I reported this to a Catholic priest, and I reported what happened to me. Then, this Marine is no longer the dot so. I don't know how the religious realm plays into the UFO realm. All I know is, it's what's happening to me in my life." After he recovered, he was sent back to the United States. Ramon was now 20 years old. He continued to work in the Marine Force, though he moved into food service. One day he went in for a full physical examination at a veterans hospital. The doctor asked him when he had surgery. Ramon had never had surgery, and denied it. "Yes, you have," the doctor said unequivocally, and told Ramon that he counted at least 3 surgical scars on his body. Ramon suspects the scars were made when he was 6 years old, during the painful examination. Life moved on. He left the Marine Corps and instead began to work as a welder. He met a girlfriend and began dating. 6 years later, at age 26, they became married. She had a six-year-old boy, so Ramon now found himself a father. They got a home in the East San Fernando Valley, not far from where he had grown up. They moved in and prepared to spend the first night in their new house. As he and his wife lay in bed, Ramon suddenly heard a strange whooshing sound move over the house, followed by a loud bang. Ramon's wife jumped up and grabbed him. What the heck was that? Ramon had a sneaky feeling it had something to do with UFOs, but he didn't say anything. The ringing in his ears had been strong lately, and that feeling of being watched and followed was still there. One evening shortly after moving in, his son complained about something strange happening. "Daddy," he said, "the bees are in my room." There were no bees, but instead his son described a strange buzzing sound. Again, Ramon had a good idea what was happening. "I knew that this was probably aliens that were trying to get into the house." Ramon wanted to help, to do something, but at this time, he had no recourse. Who could he turn to about help with aliens? He didn't know where to begin to search. Who would believe him? One evening Ramon was in the house. His wife screamed in terror from another room. Ramon ran up to her. "What's wrong?" His wife was clearly frightened. "By the window," she pointed. There was something outside the window. It was like a person, but with a different face. Ramon felt a cold chill. It was the aliens. He knew it was them. But what could he do? One day in 1974, Ramon's brother offered to take Ramon fishing at the Hanson Dam recreational area. Ramon nearly declined. "As an adult, I purposely stayed away from that area for years." But his brother was persistent, and for some reason, he agreed to go. Ramon, his brother and a few friends joined the fishing trip. Ramon was learning how to cast for the first time. He stood out by the shoreline, far enough away so that nobody would be hooked by his line. And he tried not to remind himself that he was very close to the area where he had been abducted. Suddenly he heard a familiar whooshing sound. He looked toward the source, and coming from the mountain range right above the dam exactly where he first saw the saucer with his brother and cousins all those years ago was a black circular object like a hockey puck, except it was 1 or 2 feet in diameter. Everyone else heard it too and everybody turned to watch. "That's where I first saw it," says Ramon, "right from the little hilly area where I first saw the craft. Then it circled the back rim of the dam. It went right over the water, circled us and went right over us. It came right toward me. It was directed at me, and almost skimmed my head, and went right into the water. Everyone heard it. We all saw it." "Did you see that?" someone shouted. "It almost hit Ramon." "I stay away from this area for years," Ramon said. "I come down here, and this happens." Over the next few months, Ramon's wife saw the aliens 3 or 4 times. On each occasion, she screamed in terror and ran to find Ramon. He had been seeing UFOs flying overhead, but he hadn't seen the actual aliens. "I didn't see them inside the house," Ramon says, "but she did. She described them as almost like cat-like features, tall and thin, but with a cat-like face. She said they were really, really thin, and they frightened her. Each time, I remember her screaming." After the 3rd or 4th visitation, his wife couldn't take it anymore. In 1975, about 2 years after they had married, they got a divorce. "It was so much pressure," Ramon says, "that the marriage dissolved itself." His wife and son left and moved back to Oklahoma. Weird things continued to happen. Ramon noticed one day that he was going through an abnormally large number of light bulbs. Over and over, the lights would blow out. "Wherever I was," Ramon says, "light bulbs would blow out. Every time I passed, light bulbs would blow out." Ramon decided he needed to find someone who could help him with his UFO problem. There had to be someone out there who knew about these things. He went to the bookstore and the library and discovered that there were books on the subject. "I began to read up on UFOs. I started to read anything I could about UFOs. The name of Dr. J. Allen Hynek kept coming up, so Ramon decided to contact him. He was able to locate a phone number and reach Hynek on his first try. Ramon gushed out his story, and Hayek patiently listened. Afterward, Hayek said, "You know what, Ramon? I'm going to assign you an investigator." Hayek told Ramon about the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, and put him in contact with Ida Blipperson, who was then one of Southern California's most active investigators. At the time, Ramon was a member of the United Auto Workers and Aerospace Workers. He was good friends with the president of the union, and had even gone on trips with him to meet senators. "When I went to MUFON, I took him to vouch for my character." Ipperson was impressed with his story, and warned him that there was a dark side of UFO contact. "I'm very concerned if you come next to a UFO again," she told him. She asked for some of Ramon's exploding light bulbs, and brought them to some scientists at UCLA and USC. It turned out, the light bulbs hadn't exploded, they had imploded. They couldn't explain it and didn't know how it had been done. They said that whatever caused them to explode went from the outside inward. Meanwhile, strange events continued. I started having my TVs going on and off by themselves. When I passed the TV, sometimes the sound would go up high, or when I passed the radio would go up high. Then I went through a phase where I would get these phone calls, and I would hear this garbled metallic-type voice. Someone was speaking. When I pick up the phone, I knew someone was speaking, but I heard a garbled metallic voice. That kind of frightened me a bit. Meanwhile, Ramon had noticed a pattern to the ringing in his ears. Whenever a major news story aired on TV, the ringing would begin. The high-pitched noise will go from the right side of my head to the left side of my head. I feel like the aliens are concentrating on these events, almost looking at it through me. Like they were using my eyes. By this time, Ramon was convinced that he had some kind of alien implant. Were they recording his memories? Were they seeing and feeling everything he experienced? These and other questions ran through his mind. "I always had the sense that I've got something inside me that is triggering me," he says. One day, he discovered what appears to be a foreign body underneath his skin, right next to his earlobe on the right side of his head. "It feels like a little lump," Ramon says. "Like something that's metal. I can move it with my fingers. It's about the size of a BB, and it feels like metal. I've always felt like this was part of the cause of it. I don't know what it is, but it's in there." Whatever the explanation, something strange was happening to him. His electrical problems were not only getting worse, they were causing problems at work. "I went to work for General Motors in 1976. Every machine they put me on, I blew out. When you make cars, they have these automatic welding machines that spot weld the cars. Then they had these handheld ones with a big long pole dot. We called it a seat back. Every machine, when I would get on it, within 5 minutes I would blow it out. So, they would assign me to another machine, and then I would blow that up. After about the sixth machine that I blew up, the supervisor came and they took me down to medical at the Van Nuys plant, and they asked if I wouldn't mind stripping down." Often Ramon wore his combat jungle boots to work, and they thought that the metal in his boots was causing the problem. "I'm not wearing jungle boots today," Ramon pointed out, and also said that he hadn't worn them on the day he had blown out the welding machines. The doctors insisted on a full physical examination. They were unable to locate any physical abnormalities that would account for Ramon's problem with machines. In 1981, Ramon was in between jobs and went to stay with his mother in San Fernando, California. One day he was sitting outside talking with his friend, Oscar, pseudonym, when they saw an object high in the sky. It looked metallic, but it was flashing bright red, green and yellow colors as it appeared to rotate. "Go inside and get some binoculars," Ramon said. Oscar ran inside and came out seconds later with the binoculars. At that moment, the object darted toward them at high speed and stopped about 200 feet high over their house. After only a few seconds, the object took off again, moving north. It was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. 2 days later, Ramon's uncle, his mother's brother, came to visit. He had a remarkable story to tell. 2 days earlier, just after 3 p.m., immediately after Ramon's sighting, Ramon's uncle was with other workers out in a farm field when a UFO showed up. It hovered overhead, then moved lower in a zigzag falling leaf motion and landed in the field next to them. All the workers grabbed their hoes and ran toward the object. As soon as they were about to reach it, the object lifted up and landed about 100 feet away. The workers ran up to it again, and the object again lifted up and landed 100 feet away. This occurred one more time, at which point the object left. Ramon asked his uncle to describe the object, and his uncle described exactly what Ramon and Oscar had seen. Says Ramon, "This thing showed itself to me, and then flew over and showed itself to my uncle in Fresno. Things soon became more bizarre." A few days later, Ramon was woken up at 2 a.m. by the phone ringing. It was his friend, Oscar. "Ramon," he said urgently, "come over to my house. They want to talk to you." "Who?" Ramon asked, confused. "Come over, Ramon. They want to talk to you." "Who wants to talk to me, Oscar?" "Come over to my house. You'll understand. You'll understand." At this point, Ramon's mother was also awake, and she guessed what was happening. "Don't go," she begged him. "Don't go." Ramon kept talking to Oscar. "What are you talking about?" he asked. "They said to come over, Ramon, that you'll understand. Don't go," Ramon's mother pleaded. "Please, don't go." Ramon turned back to the phone. "I can't go, Oscar. It's too early." The next day, Ramon went to meet Oscar. He asked what the phone call was all about. Oscar looked frightened and refused to talk about it. Ramon asked him again, but still Oscar refused. 3 weeks later, after repeated requests, Oscar finally broke down and spilled out his story. "Something's been happening to me," he said. "And I haven't been telling you for 15 years. Oscar said that for many years, he had been visited by ETs. He often sees a craft outside his window, and shortly later, human-looking figures appear in his bedroom. They are tall, with an olive complexion, and have blonde, shoulder-length hair. They wear what looks like flight suits, beige, with a diagonal band over the chest, from shoulder to hip. The men," Oscar said, "visit him and give him various messages. Often, they appeared in the back seat of his car on the way to and from work. On the night Oscar called Ramon, the men had appeared in his home and told Oscar, 'Tell Ramon to come over. He'll understand,' a phrase they repeated several times. Oscar did as they asked, but Ramon had refused." Ramon was shocked. Not only himself, but his friend too. They were both having contact. Ramon later learned that their neighbor had seen Oscar a few days earlier. It was very early morning and Oscar had parked in front of the house. He appeared to be talking to somebody in the back seat, however, the neighbor couldn't see anyone there. On another occasion, Ramon was taking a shower. Looking outside the window, he was shocked to see a UFO. The moment he looked at it, he heard a loud voice say, "Now is the time to accept the stone." Ramon knew exactly what the message meant. He had recently been attending a spiritualist church group, which had discussed sacred stones allegedly not of this earth which were regurgitated by church members. The stones reportedly had special properties and were being held in a secret location. Ramon felt that the message was a request for him to bring forward stones that were not of this earth. Ramon refused. He felt like, in some way, it would be a betrayal to his faith. He ignored the strange request from the UFO, and decided to remain strong in his faith to Jesus Christ. He had switched from Catholicism to Christianity, and increasingly he began to look upon his experiences with a religious perspective. Could the Greys be evil? Could they be demonic? In 1982, Ramon found a welding job for a company in North Hollywood. He had to purchase new $200 boots to protect his feet. The job entailed working late into the evening, and he usually left for home around 3 a.m. Thankfully, it was a short drive to his home in San Fernando. He had worked there for only a few months. Then, in December 1982, Ramon had missing time while driving home. He woke up alongside the road, a few miles from his home. He walked home. They later found his car parked in a lot behind a random building a few miles from his job. The next night it happened again. Ramon was driving home and then suddenly found himself on the sidewalk, a few miles from home. A long search for his car revealed it to be parked on a small cul-de-sac on a residential street about a mile or two from his job.